Welcome to the PapaCast on the Gridiron. Now here's your host, Bob Papa.
We welcome you to another edition of the PapaCast. So glad you could join us. And with great pleasure, we welcome in our guest for this edition of the PapaCast. Spent 9 years with the Giants, the last 2 seasons, a proud member of the Silver and Black, the Oakland Raiders. We welcome in Justin Tuck to the program. Justin, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing pretty well. Obviously, before we get to you personally and all the great stuff that you're doing both on and off the field, I got to get your take. As you're watching what transpires on Saturday night with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, a game that was kind of over the edge in every area, did you get a sense that as this thing got deeper and deeper and deeper that at some point it was going to get out of hand?
Well, I think whenever you're playing a game like that, two rivalry teams that meet up in the playoffs, and obviously the winner go on, loser go home, that's going to be a recipe for, you know, that type of game, that type of emotion. But, it's never a place to get to the point where it's, to whatever point that was on Saturday. And as you watch the game, you see it building and you see it, you know, possibly getting to that point, but you never think as a spectator that it's going to get to that point. And I just think, it's sad because I thought it was a hard-fought game. Like, if you take all the nonsense out of the game, it was just a classic football game. Guys mostly involved in the nonsense were guys that had pretty good games, that did a lot of things that will go overlooked now on the aftermath because of some of the extra curricular type of things that went on that football game. But Burfict, he's a prime example of a guy that had a really, really good game, did a lot of great things to help his team win, but nobody's going to talk about that part of it because of some of the crap that went on in the game as well. So it's unfortunate, but obviously the league will look at it and try to make sure that, you know, whatever they can do to make sure that nothing like that happens again, whether that's officials are stricter or, you know, coaches get involved, whatever it may be. I think obviously you don't want to see that on the football field.
Justin, as a guy that plays defense, I mean, look, the rules are all skewed for the offense. We know that.
Sure.
And they're trying to protect the offensive guys. They want points scored. Is there any way, Case, in your mind, in your brain, that you think that Burfict could have avoided what happened? Or, I mean, look, he's been known to take some cheap shots. He's been fined heavily for it in the past. Does he just sometimes play too far over the edge, and he did on that play with Antonio Brown?
My personal opinion, I think he could have pulled off. But that's obviously my personal opinion. I think the biggest thing that comes into question there is because it's a guy that, like you said, has had priors, has had issues in the past, so it's not even a thought process. It's throw the flag, and that was a bad play by him. Whereas if it's another guy, you know, that hadn't had those priors, it's probably still a flag, but it ain't like we're talking about it. Now, what, three days later, we're not still talking about it. It was just like, you know, he was in an unfortunate situation and made a bad play. But with a guy like Burfict, because of, you know, his priors, I think people are looking at it as that was a dirty play. That was a play where he tried to hurt Antonio. And it, maybe it was. I don't know. But, you know, the defensive player, obviously we know the rules are set up, like you said, to – benefit the offense, and that's just the way it is. So you got to, you know, I think as a defensive player, you have to do your due diligence to make sure that you don't even try to make it a gray area, because gray areas are going through the offense, and especially in a game, in a situation in the game like that where they're trying to drive and get, you know, a last-second field goal there. You definitely have to find a way to pull off there or try to hold him up or something. I don't know, but You can't put yourself in that situation, because obviously it's going to come back and hurt your football team, and it did in that case.
Adam Jones then gets flagged as he gets into it, and suddenly it's 30 yards, and the field goal becomes, you know, not, I'm not going to say automatic, but it becomes more makeable, as we saw with Minnesota. I guess there's nothing that guaranteed to be a chip shot. Let me ask you this, because I saw you grow up from a young player in 2005 with veteran guys around you and morph into a team leader in your second Super Bowl win when the Giants won the Super Bowl in 2011. And then I saw it with the Oakland Raiders where you've taken on a leadership role with that team, especially with the young players. Was that what was missing with Cincinnati? Once the Burfict flag goes in, that there needed to be some veteran presence that stepped in and said, whoa, we got to get control of the situation?
I mean, it always has to because, I mean, I can use Burfict for example a lot of times just because he is a really good football player. And you would love to see him take that jump from being a really good football player to being that type of football player that is, you know, Pro Bowl bound every year. And I think he could with great leadership around him. People like I had, obviously, Strahan and so on and so forth, Antonio Pierce and Kavika Mitchell and Mad Dog Madison and R.W. McCorders and O.C. Ringer, all these guys that I had that I could kind of not only point me in the right direction, but I could sit around and look and see, like, you know, if I want to play in this league 12 years and be very good and have a presence and a legacy in this game. These are people I can sit back and I can watch and I can see, you know, how they doing it. I ain't got to, you know, you can get, sometimes guys aren't guys that are going to ask questions or things like that. But if you got guys around you doing the right things, it rubs off on you. Whether you want it to or not, it kind of just rubs off on you. So, you know, I don't know Cincinnati's locker room, and, you know, I won't profess to know it. But the thing is that it has to be somebody that can get in that situation right then to say, all right, back up. Let's recalculate this thing and get our minds back to stopping Pittsburgh because that's the opponent. And it didn't seem like it was anybody that had to do that.
You know, you've been through a lot. You've won a pair of Super Bowls, and I know your old coach Tom Coughlin. One of the things that he always talked about was more games are lost than they're actually won, and we saw that this weekend. We saw Adrian Peterson have a critical turnover, which, you know, opened the door for Seattle, and then Minnesota misses a kick. Obviously, the complete meltdown with what transpired with Cincinnati, but it really is true. I mean, when you're in that locker room, how do you lead your teammates? How are you trying to lead the Oakland Raider young guys into not losing games and making sure that you win them?
I think for me personally, it's just it's all about how I act. It ain't about what I say, because that gets old real quickly. And for, you know, just going back to last year, being a new guy there, they know your reputation. They know going in about who you are and what they've seen on TV, but they don't really know who you are. They just know the reputation. So at first, yeah, me saying stuff, it would probably fly for about 2 weeks. But when it comes push to shove, they want to see guys that not only say the right things, but go out and do the right things. So how I lead is just by action. I try to, you know, if I could, my personal leading style would be just by action. I wouldn't say much. But it was years at the Giants that I felt like I had to say more. And there were years at the Giants I felt like I didn't have to say more. So I think for me, it all depends on who's around me, what guys in the locker room. And a part of leadership aspect is getting to know your guys, getting to know what they respond to and what triggers this in those guys. And I think that was something that was hard for me at first, but as I got more accustomed to the role, you know, you take guys out to dinner or you invite them over to the house to watch a game, and you talk about stuff other than football. You talk about, you know, life, and you try to figure out, you know, what makes this guy tick. And I think when you do figure that out, it goes a long way into the leadership style that will be appropriate for that situation.
I know you were a guy that always, if you got nicked, you did everything that you could to get yourself off the field and off under your own power. So I got to ask you this. I mean, Antonio Brown gets knocked down, gets hit in the head. The flag comes out immediately, so we know that's coming. Did you ever have, like, the assistant wide receivers coach come out and check on you, like, when you got hurt? What was Joey Porter doing out there?
I don't know, man. And I mean, from the people I've talked to about it and heard about it, I think it was a situation where the referees allowed it because they felt as though it was a genuine care for the player injured. And I don't know what happened you know, I don't know, Joey went out to instigate. I don't know what happened, why he was on the field to cause the little ruckus that was there. But, you know, I think that rule is in place for a reason. And if anything, I think it comes back on the referees in that case, where they got to get Joey off the field, or they got to throw a flag on the Steelers for him being on the field. But I don't know if the referees look at it as a special case, whereas, like I said, genuine concern for the athlete or not. But, yeah, I think it was a judgment call on the referee's part. But as far as what happened on the field to provoke Pac-Man or Gilberry or whoever else, you know, I don't know if any of that happened. I don't know if the Cincinnati players are just that outraged with it that they confronted Joey about it, or if Joey was out there saying things to the player. I don't know.
Based on his reputation, I'm sure he wasn't saying, hey, we should go grab something to eat after the game.
Well, yeah, Joey's a feisty guy, and he's well, I think the clip that everybody shows is Joey kind of backing off and looking like, yo, I'm just out here. If you see that video clip that's going around with the conversation, it doesn't show Joey doing anything or saying anything. It just kind of shows him like, come on, guys, I'm just out here helping the guy, or seeing if my guy's all right. He's kind of backing off and just, you know, not engaging it with him. But before that, who knows? But like you said, if you know Joey, then he's a feisty guy and was a great player in his own right.
Justin, obviously two teams from your division, Kansas City and Denver, still going. Denver has the number one seed. They decided to go with Peyton Manning over Brock Osweiler. Does that surprise you at all? I mean, how could you be surprised, right? It's Peyton Manning, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Not at all. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I think, you know, everyone knows that Peyton wasn't healthy when he was having his troubles. And is he healthy now? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see next week. But, I mean, when you got a guy of that caliber that knows how to win football games, even when he's not, you know, 100%, he knows how to get that offense in the right place, the plays, whether that run or pass. And I think, you know, he's the type of player where everybody around him stepped their – they're going to step their game up because, you know, they got Peyton Manning at the helm. I think is it the right choice? That's to be seen. I don't know. But is it a choice if I was in that position and would I have made this choice? Probably, just because of, like you said, it's Peyton Manning. And if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out with, you know, like you said, a first ballot Hall of Famer at the helm. And you can take the good and the bad with that situation, I guess. Better than what you can take it with if Brock has it.
Kansas City gets a big win in Houston. Alex Smith, okay, so you played against him in the 2011 NFC Championship game when he was with San Francisco. He's got 10 career touchdowns and one interception in the postseason. He's 2-2. He's played two wonderful games in his last two playoff appearances. Is he better than the media and the public give him credit for?
Well, he's the perfect quarterback for the situation that he's been called upon. And I think a lot of times people say they look down on the word game manager. I mean, I think that's a pretty good compliment, to be honest with you, because you see so many times you see quarterbacks lose games instead of, you know, not losing them. One thing about Alex is he's not going to go out there and give you the game. He's not going to go out there and throw interceptions. He's not going to force balls in, or, you know, turn the ball over or whatever. He's gonna put that offense in the right play. And if it's not there, he's gonna throw the ball out of bounds, or he's gonna run the ball for a first down or whatever it may be. But he's gonna give that opportunity a chance to punt. He obviously knows he has a pretty good defense, so he's gonna put it in their hands. He's not gonna lose a game for you. So I think he doesn't get enough credit for that. I think, you know, it's the reason why, you know, like you said, 10 touchdowns and one interception in this league, that's pretty awesome. And they're winning football games. And they should have won that game, you know, last year against Indianapolis. That, you know, that's the type of game that comes around, what, once every 10 years. So, you know, when we were playing him, when we were at the Giants, when he was in San Francisco, we went into the game saying that we were going to make him beat us. We weren't going to give him the opportunity to allow on his running game and things like that. And you put more pressure on him then to have to, you know, beat us with himself, Right now, for some reason or another, Kansas City is playing, you know, running the ball better than what they did when they had Jamal Charles. And that says a lot, because Jamal Charles is an awesome football player. But now, you know, it just seems like everything is clicking for them. And obviously, Alex is the main reason why.
Yeah, and, you know, from your time with the Giants and now being in the AFC West, I mean, you've gone against Andy Reid coach teams. I mean, this might be one of Andy's finest jobs that he's ever done, considering where they started 1-5.
Yeah, I mean, he has to be in consideration for Coach of the Year just because he has that team playing better than anybody else. And that's after losing guys. That's after losing Jamal Charles. That's after having Kamba Ali hurt and Justin Houston hurt. You know, I mean, and so on and so forth. And, you know, for them to be where they are right now and going into Houston and dominating that football game, you know, it's eye-opening. I don't think anybody's really going to give them a lot of chance to beat the Patriots this week. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't be like I would be surprised if they beat them. But I don't think a lot of people are going to vote that way.
Justin, you on Instagram had a really cool post when Tom Coughlin stepped down as head coach of the Giants. Obviously, you know, he's a guy that you learned a lot from. His first year was 04. Your first year was 2005. You won two championships together. You know, just quickly share with the audience just a little taste of what it was like to play for the man, and what are some of the most important things that you learned from him as your head football coach for all those years?
Well, I think for me, man, and obviously I look at things a lot differently than most your typical NFL football player. And the thing I appreciate him about, what I appreciate the most about him is the fact that, like I said in the post, he really put a solid value on what we were outside of that locker room, what we were outside of the football field. And just got a text from him the other day asking me about, you know, how big are the boys now and things like that. That, you know, that's the type of thing that sits home with me. It wasn't about, well, I need this guy to get, you know, three sacks and help us win the football game all the time. Obviously, you know, he wanted that, and he pushed us to be great football players. But it was, you know, as he got older and we got more comfortable with each other, probably in my third, fourth, fifth years in New York, it became more of a fatherhood relationship more than a coach-player relationship. And I think that's why you see all of this, you know, media or social media posts about it. You don't see that a lot with coaches. And other coaches have gotten you know, fired or resigned at other teams. You don't see an outpouring of love for that coach as much as you've seen for Coach Coughlin. I think that talks to the quality of person that he was, not just the quality of coach he was. Obviously, he's a tremendous coach, but the quality of person he is. And that's one thing I think he took a lot of pride in, not only making us better players, but also better people. And, you know, I think the rest of it kind of speaks for itself. So I'm definitely in debt to Coach Coughlin as far as my career goes and how I view a lot of things that I view. So I, like I said, all I can do is wish him great, you know, success going forward. Hopefully it doesn't involve him wearing a green jacket with an eagle on it.
That'd be tough to take, right?
It would be, man. It really would be. I think that would be, you know, I don't know if I have the words to describe how it feels seeing him in that jacket. And but, you know, like I said, even if he goes to the Eagles, I would still wish him all the best 14 times out of the year. I don't think I could root for him, you know, those two times he played with the Giants.
No, it'd be weird to see that. I mean, if he went to, like, Tennessee or Tampa, or if he would have gotten the Miami job, you could take it. But not in an Eagle uniform. It would be funny looking at him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So we'll just refrain from talking about that.
You can follow him on Twitter at Justin Tuck. Now, Justin, you talked about you're more than just a football player, and that really is true, because you're a guy that put your money where your mouth is, and fans can follow you on Twitter at Justin Tuck. But you started something that is really important. It's called Rush for Literacy. The website is rushforliteracy.org, and it's really an important piece of work that you do and that your wife does. Just talk a little bit about what was the motivation behind it, and explain to the listeners out there what they can do to be a part of this amazing, amazing thing that you have going.
Well, we started Tuck's Rush for Literacy 8 years ago, and trying to make this a shorter answer than it normally is, but the reason why we started was my first 2 years in the league in New York, you know, we were always doing events, you know, cancer events, hospital events, sporting events, anything that we can kind of get our hands on to be a part of the community, help the community in a charitable way, we were doing it. And I just remember one night coming home and, like, being dog tired and having to get up and go to practice the next day because we had probably did, like, our fourth event that week or something. I told my wife, like, you know, we're doing all this work and just running around and trying to help people, which is great, but we don't really have anything we can call our own. Let's try to sit down and think about, you know, starting our own. And when we sat down, we just thought that the two things that I could really see ourselves being passionate about to the end of time is kids and education. And that's kind of how it started. Really realizing that the number one stumbling block for any educational background is literacy, is reading. So encouraging kids to read became kind of a no-brainer for us, and had the opportunity to partner with a lot of great sponsors. The deputy mayor at the time, Dennis Wolcott, was a great avenue for us to kind of bounce ideas off of and really being able to kind of hone into where's the best places to get involved in, what Title I schools in the area needs this program the best or the most. And that's kind of how it started. And we just try to help kids read, understand, succeed, and hope, and give them the avenue of understanding that no matter what you want to do in life, it becomes a lot easier and a lot more focal with a great education. And I know that's true because my wife and I, you know, we've taken our education seriously from start to finish and continually trying to learn more and more. And that's just how we want our kids to be. We want all the kids we work with to understand that education can take you anywhere in life. Football, you know, I've been very blessed to play 11 seasons and had a lot of success. But, you know, anytime on that football field, if I blow a knee out or, you know, have a neck injury, whatever it may be, you know, my football career is over. But the education, you'll benefit from that your entire life. And I mean, I hope people can understand that it's something that we're very passionate about. If you want to help us out, man, that rushforliteracy.org website is a great place to start, and it gives you more ideas about, you know, what we're doing on a day-to-day basis and how that you can, you know, be involved.
Do you remember your favorite book as a kid?
Man, I grew up as a Killington, Alabama young outdoorsman. I was always outside. I was always running around. I never wanted to be in the house. So I love the Thomas Sawyer books because his outdoor adventures were kind of, you know, how I kind of envisioned myself as a kid.
Tom Sawyer books. Justin Tuck, the adventurer. So Rush for Literacy.
Yeah,
rushforliteracy.org is the website. I encourage everybody to go check it out. And you got a tremendous honor, too, this year. You were the Oakland Raiders nomination for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which will be announced before kickoff at Super Bowl 50, which is in the Bay Area as well. Justin, what's it like? What's it like to be recognized for such an important award?
Well, I mean, first thing you think about is what legacy Walter Payton has left on not only on this game but on this world. I mean, I don't know if you can put into words what it means, because obviously I've won a lot of awards in the sports arena, both individually and team. And I can say this, but I think I'm more proud of you know, the stuff I've done off the field. As a matter of fact, I know I'm more proud of the stuff that I've done off the field to help better people. So I'm really honored to be up for this award. Obviously, we don't do this type of work to get the accolades. We don't do this type of work to get noticed. But it is good to be noticed, and it's good to that somebody step forward and say we're very proud and you know, happy that you guys are doing this type of work, and it's making a change, it's making a difference. So obviously every team has their nominee, and you know, if you go and look at all 32 guys, all of them are very very well versed in giving back and trying to make this world a better place. And whoever wins this award, it will be definitely warranted in doing so. So you know, again, I'm just happy to be a part of it and happy to get recognized for trying to make this world a better place.
All right, final two questions. Question number one, obviously you had to deal with an injury this year which cut short your season.
Yeah.
That same passion still burn to come back for another year next year?
I'm working out like it's already May. I'm in the gym every day. Matter of fact, before I got on the call with you, I was making like a green smoothie. I'm eating healthy. You know, being an old guy now, I got to do the extra stuff to stay with these young guys. But, I mean, you know, everyone asks me, am I retiring? I'm going to do the same thing this year that I've done ever since my grandfather died, which was year 7 for me. I'm going to sit down with my wife. We're going to talk about where we are, both, you know, financially, in all capacities. We've always done that ever since year 7 for me, and we'll make a plan on what's next. And that will either be me playing another year or me retiring. I don't know where that is right now. But as far as passion goes, I love being in Oakland. I love, you know, getting the opportunity to work with the young nucleus of players they have out there, and Jack Del Rio, and what, you know, what that whole franchise is moving forward to. I've loved doing that. Obviously, I love the New York Giants and my time spent there. So, passionately, that would never be a problem for me. I always said that would be the easiest thing for me to do when I as far as knowing when to leave. When I don't have a passion to play, you won't have to ask me if I'm retiring. I'll be definitely telling you I'm retiring. Obviously, the injury part of it, I feel great. My body feels great, probably because I haven't hit anybody in about 4 months. But, we'll just see. I don't know yet.
And then the final question, obviously the last 2 years you've been in Oakland, and the Giants, you know, have struggled, and especially this past year, I'm sure you saw from afar, 5 games in which they lost with the lead inside of 2 minutes, 4 of the 5 with 36 seconds or less to go in the game. I mean, real heartbreakers.
Sure.
Do you feel that the New York Giants could have used some Justin Tuck leadership down the stretch and some Antrell Roll leadership down the stretch?
Yeah. And I got to be careful how I answer this question, Bob. But I do, just to be short, I do think that the Giants have lost something that, you know, for years and years has made them great. You know, if you think, I mean, I can only talk about from my years being in the league and going forward, but from 05 on, leadership was always in the front. It was always, that was part of the equation you never had to worry about. You know, from Michael Strahan to Antonio Pierce to myself to Eli, I'm going to call him Elijah, but Eli, on down. I mean, and it was, I'm not talking about captains. I'm talking about guys in that locker room that did the right things, that if you had a problem, you knew you could go to them and they would come to you. I didn't see that from them, the Giants, this year. And for whatever reason, obviously they had injuries and things like that, you know, always happen in this league. But, to answer your question, I do think they could have used leadership like the guys that are no longer there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, your former teammate, Prince Amukamara, said it near the end of the year that there was, you know, there was no Antrell Roll. There were no guys like you to kind of step up when things were going sideways and take ownership, at least on the defensive side of the ball. But listen, The name of the story when you talk about Justin Tuck is Rush for Literacy, because that is yours and Lauren's greatest work. Rushforliteracy.org is where you need to go. You could find out anything you need to know about it, and you can get involved. And there's a lot of ways to get involved, and some pretty easy ways to get involved as well. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. Justin, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Look forward to seeing you out at the Super Bowl, and we really appreciate you joining us here on the program.
Hey, Bob, always a pleasure, boss. I mean, anytime you need me, man, you know, you got my number.
You got it. That's the great Justin Tuck. I appreciate it joining us for this edition of the PapaCast.